bands of crazies. This includes people that have felonies. This includes people that have mental health issue. They should not be given guns. I guess my time is up. Is that right?
Close to up. You've got another 30 seconds. So go ahead and wrap up if you'd like to, please.
Okay. Hopefully these issues can be addressed. I don't know if this is on the agenda. Do you have a licensing program, a registration? How often do these people have to register their guns? I know that a famous talk show host asked you some questions about registering. So just keep that in consideration. Good. Thank you for my
Thank
time.
You. Yes, no, we do have an item in the package about seeking legislation on this front, but by and large, it does have to be done by the state or the federal government, because most of our authority here at the local level has been preempted. So that's why we're putting it in our legislative package. So thank you. Morning.
Thank you. I'm Mary Vogel, and I am representing myself and my small business, Plan Green, a women business enterprise here in Oregon. I live in downtown Portland, where my major forms of transportation are walking and biking. And I did attend both sessions, public sessions sponsored by the city on the legislative agenda. As most of you already know, studded tires cut road life in half in Oregon. So I'd like to suggest an additional point under the transportation agenda on page 36. That point is, first, deal with a major and unnecessary cause of road wear and tear in Oregon by banning studded tires. I'm sorry that the public health people who testified earlier left, because I would have liked them to hear this too. During its lifespan, the average studded tire chews up 1/2 to 3/4 tons of asphalt, according to Washington Department of Transportation. This results in a fine dust that gets into the air, on the land, and eventually is washed into the rivers and oceans. It also gets into our lungs. A Swedish study found that the toxic dust created by studded tires is 60 to 100% greater than the amount from regular tires. So, you know, regular tires do cause this dust as well, but it's 60 to 100% more from studded tires. These particles can lodge in the lungs and have an inflammatory and toxic effect, and that's been studied as well. So not only do studded tires cost us a lot more in road maintenance, they cost us more in public health, they cost us more in the livability of our cities. I'm a land use planner, and that's really important to me. So during a time of fiscal and climate crisis, to continue to allow studded tires is irresponsible. I mean, Minnesota and Wisconsin have banned studded tires. Oregon has not. I mean, I got back here from being in Maryland and D.C. during a time when they banned studded tires as well. And, you know, to come back to Oregon, the environmental state, and find that we had not banned studded tires was unheard of to me. So please ask the legislature to ban studded tires in Oregon. Add it to your points under modernize and enhance transportation funding, or make it a separate point under transportation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Morning.
Morning. My name is Jean Bucciarelli, Bucciarelli. And I didn't know how to pronounce it either until I married somebody. I'm here. I came because I wanted to provide some support for the new mayor, Charlie Hales, and his proposal to be one of the mayors against gun violence and move for legislative action. on the part of the state and the feds, I assume. I keep thinking, who elected the NRA? And I fail to understand the power that lobby has. It's just enormous. And I could go on and on, as I used to work for Commissioner Saltzman. He knows I can go on and on. But I'm going to keep it fairly short. I didn't write out anything because I didn't come prepared to testify. But I saw very few people were signed up, and so I thought, well, what the heck, I might as well. One of the things that is lacking is, and we've seen it here today, is a common sense, rational discussion. And what seems to so easily come to the forefront is fear. And fear is a crippling emotion. It just cripples people. And one of the things that I thought of as I was sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to get up there and testify, was the serenity prayer. And grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, I'm old enough to have some wisdom, and I'm also, I think you are courageous enough to know that you can do something. The fact that it's a complex and terribly, terribly complex and emotional issue is no reason to do nothing. And there are things that can be done, and certainly banning assault weapons is one. Eliminating these up to 100 or whatever bullets that these high-capacity magazines can carry is another. Improvements to the mental health system certainly is another. But that is a very complex issue, too. How are we to decide who's mentally ill and who isn't? What about the person who seems quite sane until he's drunk? You know, so it's... I commend you for taking this complicated issue and not cowering, to have the courage to do what can be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gene. Thanks.
The last two signed up are Katie Poole and Lynn Smouse Lopez.
Good morning.
Morning.
Please just give us your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, let us know.
My name is Kathleen Poole. I live in Portland, and I am a member of Ceasefire Oregon. Mayor Hales and commissioners, I am here to offer a strong endorsement of the gun safety objective in this agenda. It is the mayors and city officials nationally who see firsthand the human toll that assault weapons take on our cities, our citizens, and our public safety officers. Nationally, perhaps that's why it is the mayors who have been the strongest voices for effective gun laws. We are grateful for your leadership, and we urge adoption of the gun safety objective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me speak today. I'm Lynn Smouse Lopez, S-M-O-U-S-E, and I pastor Ainsworth United Church of Christ, which is a member of Ceasefire Oregon, and we've declared a gun-free zone. Our church is a gun-free zone. And I, too, come here just to support anything you can do for gun control, in particular the ban on semi-assault weapons and high-level magazines. But frankly, I wish we could make our city gun-free. The death toll for guns isn't just in mass shootings, but it's in homes. It's suicides. It's accidental shootings as well as murders. So anything you can do to push that agenda citywide, statewide, I would very much appreciate, and we would stand behind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to testify? If not, perhaps. Oops, sorry, Walt, come on.
Thank you, Mayor Harold Hales. Walt McKesky, 6815 Southeast 31st Avenue. I didn't sign up because I expected a large crowd, but I just want to add my support of the agenda item in your legislative agenda to work to end military-style weapon and high-capacity ammunition magazines. They have no place in our streets. They're designed to kill people, and they need to be banned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. So, Martha, maybe we can get you and your team back and return to the questions and amendments that we were discussing earlier. Don't know if we need some more time outside of formal session or not, but Steve, you look like you have something on your mind.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was actually thinking that really I just want to get in the concept that we recognize that we hope that some of the mental health issues will be addressed by the Medicaid expansion, so I could limit my suggested amendment to simply adding my last sentence: to the extent that the Medicaid expansion addresses the mental health crisis, performance incentive funding could be used for other public safety needs.
So that raises a further question in my mind. What's your concept as to how specific the legislature might be? And maybe this is a question for the team as well as for you, Commissioner Nowick, as to would the legislative would the legislation establishing this performance incentive funding specify what it could be used for?
Actually, nobody has yet submitted any legislation that's specific at all. So I think that it'll probably be fairly general. And in fact, I would recommend that it be fairly general. So I think that we should work to ensure that it's broad enough to encompass mental health. However, it should also be broad enough to encompass other things.
Can I ask a question, just a clarifying question here? I'm going to defer to the two of you on this one because you're our point. Commissioner Fritz has been our point on this. But I think a constant frustration is dollars for one purpose used for another purpose. And an example is the tobacco settlement that the state won that was then put into the general fund and spent for other purposes. Most recently, it was the mortgage fraud lawsuit settlement that Attorney General Kroger entered into, again, swept by the legislature, put in and spent for non-housing-related purposes. Is the thrust of what you're asking us to think about today keeping new dollars or savings within the system, or we assume they are going to stay within the system and we're allocating them to a particular priority?
Well, that's why I'm somewhat concerned with having any reference to what it might be used for. It seems appropriate to me that if the performance standard is set, which I certainly support the concept that if local jurisdictions can reduce the cost for incarceration in our county, that we would then be rewarded for that. I would like it to be left to the council and the county and the CCOs working together to figure out what's the best allocation of that money, rather than having any reference to it in our state legislative agenda, because I'd be concerned that they might get the thought that they might want to specify exactly what we could use it, or that they might sweep it for something else.
I think that there's a danger that the legislature might, absent suggestions for a broad definition, might come up with something narrow like only to community corrections. So actually, my purpose in having a fairly long list was to essentially ask them to define it broadly, my purpose actually was to be more broad than specific in giving a bunch of different examples.
And I support that. I'm just concerned that even this last sentence starts getting a bit specific and doesn't address the issues that not all mental health care needs are going to be covered by Medicaid.
Right. It's just that, I mean, part of, for one thing, I want to make it clear that the performance incentive funding should be used that if they feel like they've addressed the mental health crisis through the Medicaid expansion, that wouldn't satisfy their obligation to reward a county for limiting its use of prisons, and also to just reflect the fact that we're aware that the Medicaid expansion is going to have an impact on this, and to the extent that it does, the money could be used for other things.
I'm not sure I agree with that last statement, but I guess maybe the team could give us some advice on how prescriptive we want our language to be in this policy.
I think much like some other items we've discussed today, what's most important is that the outline of what it is you would like to see achieved at the state legislature is captured in this document. I think we always have the ability to hone in more and to become a little bit more specific, but I think this is a signal to the state legislature that we the city wants to be part of this conversation, and that they will be making some very difficult policy choices when they're putting together their state budget. So I think my advice would be write it in a way that broadly captures your consensus view, and then we can dig, as that discussion moves along, we can dig more into the details as to when they're making policy decisions, we can figure out how those decisions then impact the levers of either our budget or the services we provide.
Martha, do you think, I mean, maybe I'm being too paranoid, do you think that there's any inconsistency with the language that we have now and the points that all of us have raised?
The unamended language?
Yeah.
My sense of this, and Andy, I would invite you to jump on if you've got a different thought, but I think that this gives us the flexibility to work on both of these issues as drafted. If there's something we're missing, I'm happy to entertain what that looks like, but I feel like we do have a good working outline in the agenda to engage both on how the public safety budgeting piece comes together and how the state's funding mental health.
In that case, maybe I'll just back off. I mean, I would like to change the title, public safety budgeting for the mental health care crisis, to public safety budgeting and the mental health care crisis, to make it clear that it's not limited to that. But as long as the team is comfortable that this language gives them the flexibility to do what we all want to see, then I'll shut up.
And I agree with that suggestion to change for to and. Thank you.
Any other discussion about that item? So I don't know if we're adopting policy, not ordinances here, so I don't think we necessarily have to take formal voice votes on approving amendments. So I think it's the sense of the council that we're going to change that for to and.
Oh, and actually, I apologize, Mr. Mayor. I also would like to throw the word reentry in the two longer list if
yes.
We're going to maintain that.
So unless there's any dissent with those two, let me see, I'll show you on page. It was a list of it's in the fourth third line under the objective,
right?
Prevention, mental health services, reentry, and enforcement programs, or something.
It's also the third line from the bottom.
And the third line from the bottom.
Yep,
so
that's good.
Unless there's any objection, we'll make those changes to the draft, and then let's more formally take up the specific addition to the list that Commissioner Fish has proposed. Any further comments about that, reactions from the team?
We're comfortable with the amendment.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment? Could you call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Thank you, Martha and Andy, for turning this around in 24 hours. And you guys do great work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then Ms. Vogel raised the question of studded tires, which is not specifically on our list. I've heard a lot about that issue over the years. I don't know if the league has talked about it recently, Dan, but
I'm not aware of the league discussing it. I think we should ban studded tires personally.
Is there discussion underway at the legislature about this issue? I've heard from activists on the subject over the years. As a transportation guy, I've been around this issue, and anyone who tries to drive on an interstate highway gets their lesson, driven home, every time we do, because the ruts are there. What's the debate about this issue at the moment, or is there any?
Legislation has been introduced in recent sessions, but it has not been successful. I think it's a concept that's in the context of sort of a larger discussion about proper management of roads under winter conditions.
And ODOT, does ODOT have a position on this issue at this point? Does the agency have a point of view on this?
I would need to check on that and get back to you.
So I guess I would like to not necessarily act immediately on this, but I'm inclined to add it to our package. I'd like to have a chance to check in with the Transportation Commission, mm-hmm. the State Transportation Commission on the subject. I want to appreciate you raising the issue, Ms. Vogel. I think it is a clear and dumb situation that we're in as a state, that in a state with a pretty benign climate, that we have people using studded tires on bare or wet pavement a lot of the time. So thank you for raising the issue. I don't want to necessarily add it specifically to the package now, but I'd like us to pay attention to the issue. And if there is an opportunity to do something in this session of the legislature, add it to our package at that point. Any other thoughts about that issue?
The way Ms. Vogel suggested adding it under the transportation bigger priority just as another piece seems
I'm okay with that for now, unless you think we're being too hasty on that subject in terms of the politics of the issue.
You know, first of all, I think it's a very good issue, and I think it's one that certainly I've heard come up at the legislature before. Typically, if we were going to add something to a policy position on transportation, we would also vet it through the Portland Bureau of Transportation, which we haven't had an opportunity to do. I think my recommendation is that what Dan and Andy and I will do is we will add it to our list of items that we are monitoring. When it comes up at the state legislature, we will bring that back before council, not an official way, but we will make sure that we have time then before then to vet it through our processes. And then if appropriate, then the city will weigh in. My sense is there's a vast majority or vast diversity of voices on it, and I don't see any reason at this point why the city couldn't weigh in, but I think to be go through our regular process, which is to vet it through the Bureau, obviously check back in with your offices with anything else we learn, and then keep the opportunity to weigh in open.
Okay, I'd like to do that, but I appreciate the issue getting raised, and it's certainly timely. Thank you. Any other discussion about, I think we've acted on the amendments that we have in front of us. Any other?
I had one question for the team, which is, are you aware of anybody who will be taking the lead on limiting the concentration of video lottery establishments? But we have that as a priority, but that means that we're assuming that somebody else will push it, I guess.
For clarification, and I think we have that as a policy position, is that right? So we have it as a policy position. I'm not aware of who's taking the lead on it, but I'm certainly happy to check in with the sort of the usual suspects to see who's planning on bringing that forward.
I mean, I obviously don't want to add more to your workload, but I mean, I think it's a serious issue, particularly in some parts of this city, and if nobody else is taking the lead. I mean, I suspect, frankly, that Speaker Kotek might take the lead on this issue, but if there's nobody else taking the lead, it's something that I'd like us to strongly support.
I thought you were going to use the word volunteer.
Well, it's actually under the Office of Neighborhood Involvement with our work with liquor licensing, so there's a whole package of things which I will talk about under my comments, but that we've been working with Speaker Kotek. Doesn't that have a nice ring to it, Speaker Kotek?
It does.
And also with Senator Dingfelder and others on alcohol and lottery issues. And so that's the past two sessions we've taken some runs at it, and we'll check in and find out what's the next step, but I'll be very happy to have your partnership in lobbying on those things, because I haven't quite been able to push the boulder over the top of the hill.
I guess if nobody else is actually taking the lead on introducing the legislation, is it possible that we could revisit this and say that the city ask a legislator specifically to introduce such legislation?
The reason I hesitate just a little bit is that the deadline is Friday for asking members for bill drafts, unless we are going to need to go to somebody to use one of their priority bills. So our opportunities to ask members to draft legislation get much more difficult after Friday. So that'll be one if we're not sure whether the city's going to be the lead or somebody else is going to be the lead. I prefer not to wait too long because I want to make sure it's clear what are the things, what are the bills we're moving on and getting them in and drafted, because obviously we need to give Legislative Council time to do their work. What I can commit is trying to get a sense of the landscape this week of who's introducing lottery bills and getting a sense of what the scope of those are, because I anticipate there will be bills. We just need to see who's taking that on, and then I can report report back to you and the rest of council offices on that.
Maybe actually Commissioner Fritz or I could make a couple of calls and help make sure that somebody introduces a bill by Friday if they haven't already.
We'll work with government relations on
great.
That.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
And Mr. Mayor, I had just one more question, which is you've taken the lead in this issue, so I assume that you gave thought to whether to adopt the gun safety agenda items as priority items and concluded that they should be policy positions rather than priority items. But I just wanted to ask you and also to ask the government relations team, would it be too much of a burden to take those up as priority items?
Yeah, I'm comfortable either way. I obviously plan to be active on the issue at the state and federal level personally, but I invite everyone on this council to participate in that effort. So exactly where it's designated in this package, it could be in either situation as far as I'm concerned. I don't think it changes the burden on the staff necessarily if we loft it to the level of a priority instead of simply having it at the on the policy list. Any concerns about that?
Mayor, Commissioner Novick, I don't have a strong preference. If it's on the priority list, it sends a stronger signal that it's a priority of this council. And it is but ultimately it's a decision that I would look to you all for, and I'm comfortable with that.
Well, let me comment on that as well, and then maybe accept an amendment here, and that is, I think like everyone else on this council, when we met in November, I didn't think that this issue was as critical as I do now, because like everyone else, I've been shocked and saddened by what's happened. And so we've decided as a community by putting this on our legislative agenda that it is important to us. And therefore, it wasn't originally as high on anyone's priority list as it is now. So I think it would be, in my heart, it would be a priority, and therefore I'd certainly be open to raising it to that level on this list.
I think that's appropriate, Mayor.
So hearing no concerns or objections with that, we will make that a priority item and amend the list accordingly. Thank you. Any further discussion? Thank you, team, for a lot of work. We'll talk more about that as we take our vote, but thanks for a good discussion today. Carla, please call the roll.
Fritz?
Thank you to Martha Pellegrino and the team at Government Relations. It's terrific to work with you and to work with the citizens of Portland. Ms. Vogel showed that you can show up at the very last hearing after a year process of setting an agenda and get a significant amendment. So I appreciate all the citizens who showed up both in August and September at our listening sessions. Many of the priorities and initiatives reflect the input that we received, particularly the shared narrow residential roadways and the speed limits on that. That was something that the community heard. The package also reflects previous listening sessions and the input of the film industry into tax abatements. And Senator Ginny Burdick actually referred to that also when she was doing the Advocacy 101 training, that it is people showing up and explaining why these things matter and why they make a difference in a positive way that makes a real difference. We had, I think, 240 people at our Advocacy 101 session last week. So the beauty of that and the value of that is not only that we have the input into the city's agenda and then our wonderful lobbying team working in close consultation with the city council in Salem, we also have citizens who are willing to go down to Salem to call their legislators as constituents to make sure that we are working as a team. And so that is how I think government is supposed to work, and I'm very proud to be part of that. Thank Mayor Hales and former Mayor Adams for their work in setting the agenda. I'm particularly interested in the home buyer opportunities tax exemption continuing to be there. The independent authority of the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund is crucial for our fiscal management. The alcohol impact areas and immediate cessation of alcohol sales when there is a problem are two of my ongoing priorities that I will continue to work with you on. Hopefully we can make some progress this session. Funding for the 911 taxes and for making sure that we do have adequate funding for school funding, which we have not had for decades. And that I'm so pleased, Mayor Hales, that that's one of your number one priorities. We must educate our children. We must use the teachers who have been trained and make sure that those buildings that are upgraded have the teachers and the support within them to make our educational system more functional. Thank you very much. Aye.
Fish?
A lot of work goes into this, so anyone watching this proceeding today thinks that we kind of get together, we have a civil discussion about a few tweaks, and we're done, but an awful lot of work goes into getting to this point. So I want to thank my colleagues, and especially Martha, Dan, Andy, Stephanie, Molly, Leslie, and Amy. Once we're finished with this, we then have the hard work of actually moving this agenda in Salem. And you invite each of us to come down when appropriate to make the case. And what I'm always impressed by and proud of is that when we meet with legislators, what they always tell us, the commissioners, is that we have a lot of credibility in Salem because of the quality of the people who represent us in Salem. And, you know, they're always singing your praises, Martha and your team. And that credibility gets us in the door and gives us a chance to have a fair hearing. So we're very, in my opinion, we are very well represented in the Office of Government Relations. I want to thank you for all your great work. Commissioner Fritz mentioned support for public education. I guess I should say that my 9-year-old son thanks the council, too, for fighting for adequate funding, since he's a third grader, hoping that the classroom size stays at 35 or whatever and doesn't go much bigger over the years. I look forward in the next few months to working with you, Martha, down in Salem to advance the issues I'm particularly passionate about. And I just want to call out that we're very fortunate this year that Speaker Kotek has identified a number of things which are high priority for her, early childhood education, some of the health and human services issues. And I'm especially grateful that she's put housing on her issue, on her agenda, and she's dropped a bill this week which would address the question of barriers to housing choice, which we've teed up as one of our priorities. And in plain English, that just means that people with a Section 8 voucher would no longer face barriers to finding a landlord willing to rent to them. And it deals with a long, festering problem, and I'm delighted that she's agreed to take the lead on that. So thank you, Mayor Hales and colleagues, and particularly thanks to our superb team at Government Relations. Aye.
Seltzman?
Well, I want to thank you all for your work. Maybe I shouldn't thank you yet, but I'll wait and see how you deliver. But no, I do thank you for all the preparation. And I do want to thank you. I think this is now our fourth legislative session, I should say, that we've had a priority for support for rural communities. I think it's very important. I think it's not only sends a powerful signal to legislators when Portland has a rural agenda in its legislative agenda, but I do think it's very important that we recognize that the rest of the state is still very, very impacted by the recession. And not to say that Portland isn't, but our rural communities are really hurting. And so to the extent that we recognize that, I think that not only helps us advance our agenda, but it does increase our standing, I think, with many legislators outside of the Portland area. So thanks again for doing that, and pleased to support this. Aye.
Novick?
I echo the sentiments of my colleagues. I really, really appreciate the work of the Government Relations team. I really, really appreciate the input of all the citizens who have been part of this process. And I appreciate Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard inviting Mayor Hales and myself to a meeting on this agenda last month before we were sworn in. And I remember feeling at the time as we had that discussion that this feels like a really good team. And I'm proud to be part of this team, and I have the same feeling today. And I think this is a great agenda. Thank you so much, and I vote aye.
Hales.
Yeah, I'm really proud of us for this. I'm proud of this council for being passionate and well-informed about these issues and being prepared to go and advocate to the legislature and to anyone else that's paying attention to these issues that they are priorities for us as a city. I'm proud of our professional staff for working well and effectively with us and with a lot of citizens who care about these issues as well. And I'm proud of us as a community that we have had a lot of good suggestions and advice and willingness to be partners with us from community members, including those who came here today. So this has been a very effective process. It now falls to all of us to go do that advocacy and for each of us to dedicate time and whatever political influence we have to work with, I think, a legislature that's prepared to listen to us. So to me, this is not only a well-crafted package, but it's arriving at a time where I believe our influence can be felt. And I particularly appreciate some of the points that we heard here today, that that influence will be not only for our own citizens, but for the citizens of the whole state. So if this package is influential and is adopted by this session of the legislature, or many parts of it are, will not only make Portland a better community, but make Oregon a better community as well. So I commend the good work that's been done. I look forward to being one of those advocates on this dais and in this community that goes down and helps make sure that these proposals become law. Thank you all for good work, and I vote aye. Thanks. We have another time certain item, I believe, and staff standing by to talk about it. Carla?
Item 37, adopt budget adjustments and establish appropriation authority for the Arts Education and Access Fund, Private for Hire Transportation Program Reform, and Department of Justice Agreement Implementation.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Scott, and with me today is Sarah Lowe, the City Budget Office Analyst for the Revenue Bureau, which are the items we're going to be dealing with today. I'll quickly summarize what's in this supplemental budget. Since it is a little bit different, I don't think there's anything that you're not expecting in the budget, but we don't often do a supplemental budget outside of our normal bump process. So what this item today does is it formally appropriates funding and positions for the Arts Education and Access Tax Program and the Private for Hire Transportation Program. Again, we normally would do this during a budget monitoring process, but in the case of these two particular programs, there's a need to appropriate the funds and approve the positions quickly so that the Revenue Bureau can hire staff and begin implementing the programs. You will also note the title, of the original item, has Department of Justice in it as well. Those items have been taken out, and does the substitute also need to be introduced? Okay, so I'll explain that as well. We did receive some questions. This was originally filed back in December. We received some questions from council about those DOJ costs and asked the City Budget Office to take another look at those. So we're in the process of doing that right now, we'll be providing that review back to council as part of the winter bump process, which, again, it's about 3 or 4 weeks from now when we'll be back to talk about the winter bump. So we'll provide sort of our analysis of the DOJ reform costs and any recommendations we have, and then as part of the winter bump process is when we'll be dealing with those DOJ costs. So just very quickly, what is now in the supplemental budget before you today, it will create 6.5 new positions in the Revenue Bureau, and it appropriates $9 million in new expenses. Specifically, the Arts Education and Access Tax is the largest piece of that. It's just under $9 million in total revenue, which is, again, funded by the new tax that was passed last November. $762,500 of that is for program expenses to run the program, and then $8.2 million will be held in contingency in the new fund that voters created when they passed the measure that is, again, dedicated to the Arts Education and Access until the distribution decision are finalized. And then under that program, again, it's 4.5 FTE in the Revenue Bureau to implement the program. There are also private for hire transportation reforms. These were previously approved by council essentially increased taxi company and taxi vehicle renewal fees. Those revenues are going to fund new positions in implementation of those reforms. So again, that's 2 FTE and in the current year, $46,000. That's prorated for the rest of the year. Those reforms will collect enough to fund both of those FTE in future years going forward. With that, I guess I think we do need a substitute that, again, was filed for this week.
May I have a motion for the substitute?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Substitute is replaced and before us. Thank you.
And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Andrew, I have a question. Yeah. The Arts Education and Access Tax is obviously a new initiative, and there is an assumption built into this about the amount that we'll collect, but we're not going to know until we actually bill folks and see how successful we are. The measure that was voted on had a cap on administrative expenses?
Yes.
Was it a percentage cap or a hard cap?
Percentage.
Both.
There's a hard cap on the one time on the startup costs, $500,000. And there.
Oh, yeah, it's your name.
I apologize. I know better than that. Thomas Lanham, Revenue Bureau Director. So the one-time cap is the $500,000 in the startup cost. The ongoing cap is a percentage, 5% of the revenues collected.
So that's important to note that the $500,000, which is budgeted for startup, the voters have authorized us to spend that regardless of how successful we are in terms of the collection. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then the percentage kicks in once we start receiving funds, and we're capped as a percentage of what we receive in terms of administrative overhead.
That's correct, and it's calculated over 5 years. So it's 5% cap over the five-year period.
So it could fluctuate.
It could drift above, slightly above 5 in 1 year and below in other years. But overall, we will maintain below 5%.
Okay, thank you.
And what's the mechanism of collecting the tax?
Well, we'll have a range of tools available to us. We hope that people will really use our website. That keeps the cost of customer contact minimized. So we expect to bring up a website in the next 45 or so days and make sure that we got a press release, we got a marketing campaign, make sure people are aware of the tax and request that they go to the website. And that's the primary means in the first year. Of course, they'll also be able to file paper returns and that sort of thing, get information from that website. In out years, we will leverage our partnership with TurboTax and other third-party software preparation providers so that if you are in the city of Portland and you're using the TurboTax application, you'll actually be presented with you get your federal and your state, and then your local tax will be presented there. So we anticipate that will really help to remind people and keep this in the forefront of their minds that they need to pay this tax.
But this year it'll be separate from income tax returns?
That's correct.
Thank you.
And it's just the nature of the timing of the passage.
Okay. Other questions for staff?
If not, I guess one question, Mayor. When you come back to us, Andrew, on the DOJ settlement, will we also get a briefing on any related legal proceedings?
I can talk to the city attorney about providing that briefing.
Just to the extent they are linked,
mm-hmm.
I think we would need a briefing.
Yeah, let me do that. Mayor, I would just, since this is your first supplemental budget, I'll just remind you to open a hearing before we have testimony and then close it afterwards if there is any testimony.
We'll be accepting testimony if there is any. Thank you. Any other questions for staff at this point? Then I want to take the vote to place the substitute before us, and then we'll conduct the hearing on that. So could you call the roll on accepting the substitute?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone here signed up to testify or interested in testifying in this item?
No one signed up.
And then if that's the case, we'll take the vote on the ordinance as substituted.
Fritz?
I'm happy to support this so that the Revenue Bureau can start implementing the voter-approved arts tax and the important changes in the private for hire reforms. Again, very grateful to the voters for approving the tax. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you very much. I think we have one more regular calendar item in front of us, item 50, Carl.
Item 50, replace the sewer user charges code for consistency of definitions, clarification of terms, an addition of enforcement measures.
Saltzman, anything to any staff presentation on this? If not, roll call, please. Public testimony? I don't think there is.
Just for a second reading?
Is it? I didn't see. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Did it just move to second reading?
Yes.
Okay, moves to second reading. And I believe we are adjourned until this afternoon at 2 p.m., at which time we have a single item, which is a land use case. Council's adjourned. Get this procedural stuff down eventually.
You know, not really. We all, whenever we're president, we all do it.